Fitness.
Good afternoon, everybody. How's everybody today?
Well, let me speak on their behalf, Charles. They're wonderful.
They're wonderful. Good. That's
They're...
what I figured. That's what I figured they were going to say,
Yeah.
Eddie.
I got Mr. Matt on this running the boards.
Hello.
Oh, Mr. Matt, what are we going to talk about today?
All right. Well, we've got a couple of good questions. And first off, I'm going to see if Karen or Todd is ready to go. Todd, I have you unmuted if you want to go ahead.
Can you hear us?
We can. How are you?
Good. How are you, Eddie?
Doing great. Hey, Todd. All
All
right,
right.
tell us a little story here, guys.
Well, this is our lovely Fern Street house that we talked to you and Charles about at the end of November. We had the tenant issue and the property management issue, and it's all cleaned out and ready to go now. And I know that you said that you wanted pictures and just some more information. I'm hoping that we gave you enough. I think we feel like 50-50 is good if we can just, we're really pretty new at this, Eddie. We've been doing like fixes and flips and lease options, but the note stuff is new. So, and I know you've probably done a million of these, so.
Oh, this house is ugly. I don't think anybody would want to live here.
Apparently not, because we can't seem to keep anybody in it.
I think it's got some kind of curse on it, really.
Oh man, that's
You have to do a lot of repairs on it, Karen.
Todd's sitting here. These are obviously summer pictures. The weather is just rainy and nasty. It still looks like this, but
The color, the beige that you're seeing in the bathroom, bottom right-hand picture, that's closer to the color now. This picture with the octagon room on the left is
right.
more of a yellow. That's all gone. Honestly, we just put brand new carpet throughout the upstairs, coming down the stairs, and then one of the bedrooms downstairs. It's got a brand new stove, brand new dishwasher. It's got a microwave range hood. We just went in and I repainted basically every room.
Hey, yeah. Let me. While you're telling your story, Todd, Matt, you got that new calculator that Zarina and I worked on, where it tells you how much you could own or finance.
The NOI.
Not the NOI, but the how much you can own or finance calculator.
I don't think I have that calculator.
All right. Well, I'm gonna make sure that we get it to you, and I want to pull that calculator up. So, Todd, keep telling us about the house, and specifically, I want to know neighborhood demographics, and I want to talk about rental income.
Okay. Basically, the house is about 1,600 square feet. It's a five bedroom, two bath. So the downstairs has a tub and shower. The upstairs has just a tub, no shower. Out of You can take baths in it. The rooms are small. It's an old farmhouse, bungalow, farmhouse.
Three bedrooms up, two down.
Three bedrooms up, two down. Demographics, it's a heavy rentable area. The three houses to the right of this property are rentals. The guy next door, I believe, is owner occupied. There's a house across the street that I'm trying to get marked as blight because it's been vacant. They've done drugs out of there, that kind of stuff. It's pretty much cleaned up. It's just old and trashy now, so the drugs are pretty much stopped. The new KCDC Section 8 rental units came out, and for a four bedroom, two bath, you're looking at $1,350. But you're looking at that's utilities included, and
Is this house a four bedroom?
well. here's the thing. We were told to actually market it as a four-bedroom, two-bath instead of a five-bedroom, two-bath. It's actually
It's a five-bedroom?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
But a good friend of mine who's definitely in the market, understands that area, he thought on a Section 8 rental it would be better served as it would move faster for about the same amount of money rented as a four bedroom two bath instead of a five.
I put conservatively $900 on the rent because that's what we were getting for it this last problem tenant.
I think $900 to $950 all day long will rent for that, especially on Section 8.
Are you going to register it with Section 8 and try to use Section 8?
We will if that's what Carrington puts in there, or, you know.
We've had real bad experience with it, so I am hesitant personally, but.
You they changed some of those standards.
Sorry about that. What was that?
I'm sorry, Karen. You've had bad experience with Section 8?
Oh,
we
yeah.
have.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the first family we put in here, the mom was arrested and left two kids living in the home while she was in jail.
Now, they were teenagers, but still.
Teenagers.
Yeah.
And then we had another property, Section 8, same thing, nailed on the news, all that good stuff.
Our experience has been that, yes, you get your rent auto deposit on the first of the month, but they do not take care of the property. And
I'm told that some of those standards have changed to make it tougher for the tenants to stay if they have if they don't keep the house up and you retain the voucher.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not had a conversation with Section 8 yet to clarify what's changed between, say, 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, and today.
Yeah. All right, Charles, here's what I think we ought to do. Matt, you get that calculator? That's the cap rate calculator. I forwarded you the other one. Did you get it? Let's do this one first, Matt. Plug in. I think 900 is too cheap, don't you, Charles?
I do. For a five bedroom, definitely.
So plug in about, what did y'all say? 13 what?
Well, it's $1,350, Eddie. But that has to account for the utilities. So that's rent and utilities is what Section 8 will pay.
Yeah. Let's go to the other calculator first, Matt. I'm gonna go back to this one, but I do want to use it.
So with utilities in there, you're probably, because it's an older home, and we have blown in, I blew in about 5-6 inches of insulation in the attics. So I'm hoping to reduce some of that utility cost for the tenants. But I think an average of $400, that's going to bring it down to about a rent rate of about $950. In the coldest months, it could be $400 or $500. In the light months, in the hot months, it could be, you know, $400 or $500 for the month utilities.
What's the taxes run on it?
I set that. Hang on. I think it was
We're coming, Eddie.
Sorry. I was thinking it was about 50 each. I'm getting there.
It was 60, but it could be 50.
Insurance, 50. Taxes, 69 a month for city and county.
All right.
Say that one more time.
$70.
And 50 for insurance.
All right. So, Matt, why don't you roll it up to about 11 cap? So just go down to the bottom, set the 12 cap, change it 11. So I think that's probably not too far off the 50-50 number right there. 80,000.
Right.
All right, Matt, pull up your other calculator, Matt. Like a little bit bigger, everybody can see it.
It just seems like it would work because we owe about 38 on the mortgage. I mean, if we could get half up front, we could pay the mortgage, and then we'd be paid off in 5 years. And
that's correct. So, Matt, plug in... I think plug in $1,000 and then take out go down here. I don't know, Charles, you think it'll go for a 20-year deal?
Yeah, I'd go a 20-year deal on this.
So here's my thought. I think you could owner finance it, ask for probably $7,000 to $10,000 down, and then owner finance about $95,000 to $98,000.
Really?
Selling to a consumer. Now listen. I want to be clear about this. I hadn't seen a rent fax. I hadn't seen, you know, there's things. I'm not done enough due diligence to know whether this neighborhood and this house can withstand it.
It wouldn't count. It wouldn't have for 97. I'm pretty sure of that.
According to who?
According to demographics,
But on a seller finance, yeah. I mean, it would never in a million years sell on the MLS with a realtor. But
you don't seriously think I would call a realtor, do you?
No. I know. That's. I mean, I could list it. I've got my license. I just it's not. That's why we're coming to
keep
you.
Keep it out of MLS is noise.
Yeah.
Okay. So, no, I'm just saying to you that, you know. You're selling a monthly payment. Megan, can you sell this house on a $1,000 payment if its rent is $1,300 a month?
On a $1,000 payment?
Yeah, including T&I.
Yeah.
Okay, well, can you finance it for 20 years for somebody?
Sure.
Are they concerned about what the price is?
They are not. You're selling them that payment, Eddie.
There's your answer.
Okay.
Let a realtor tell you, Karen, that you can't sell it for that.
So I don't know. You know, you're not giving me any sense that it's in like an unacceptable neighborhood.
No, on the Trulia map, if you look, it's in a green area, but it's right on the edge of a yellow, and it's just an older part of town.
Okay. All right, so here's what I did, okay? I ran one model at the 50-50, and I ran one model selling it just to a consumer. Now, you won't get as much down to the consumer, and you will have a much longer-term note. So if you sold the note, it wouldn't be worth as much. And generally, this is a Monday night call, okay? But I just wanted to spend just a minute and give you some options. Now, this is more of a drill-down seller finance subject, and I'm not going to spend a huge amount of time talking about this on this call.
That's fine.
Okay? But I wanted to give you a scope of what I thought the possibilities were. And I know it freaks you out. I got it. Because you're looking at how a realtor would sell it, and Charles and I are going, we wouldn't do it. Let me do you the big disclaimer, okay? You... And 40% of the people in the mentoring program are licensed realtors. And I'm not criticizing your profession. I'm saying your profession doesn't sell low price band houses that are below the financeable range at the same prices that we have found that we can sell them for. I'm not saying you can't go sell nice houses, and that's a very functional part of the market. But in working class stuff where it's kind of non-bankable, they can't get conventional financing, it don't matter. I mean, it's like, yeah, we're just selling a monthly payment. Both of these models are structured around selling a monthly payment. One to a tenant, one to a consumer. So, does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, there's nothing about the area that jumps out at me.
Yeah, the house itself shows fine. I mean, there's no question. I mean, even if you're looking at to the right and left, the house to the left's a little bit scary. The house to the right's 8 years old.
I would spend the money. Are you saying you'd spend like $1,500 and reblow the attic so it's got a lot more insulation in it?
Oh, no, we didn't spend. I mean, it already had insulation in it. We blew probably 150. To get it up to like an R19, R20, something like that.
Okay, well, what would you have to do to pull down the utility bill?
What would you have to do to pull down the utility bill? New windows?
It would probably, the only two options would probably be either some kind of spray foam in the walls or and new windows. Because I don't know how to get to, it's an all brick house. I don't know how to get the insulation in, but there's still enough there. So windows.
Any way you could redo it economically, Charles?
What the? You're talking about the windows?
The spray foam insulation in the walls, or I know windows are just probably not practical.
No, I mean it's not practical other than just doing some caulking around the windows, as far as caulking them. You know, insulation in an attic, I mean.
No, we're talking about the walls. You already done the attic.
Okay. Really, on a two-story house, that could be an expense trying to put insulation in the walls.
And honestly, right. I cut one of the, there's that upper dormer there. When I cut through that to get to, if you're looking at the, to get to one side of the attic, the walls actually had the original insulation fully intact. So the walls may actually be fine.
Well,
I'm not saying they are, I'm not saying they're not. I'm saying that when I got into it, it looked like the original insulation for that house.
I was just thinking, too, that TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, the electric, they'll come out and do a home and energy efficiency free and can kind of tell you. Give you ideas, maybe. Oh, okay, well, $50 is pretty cheap.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, you could do that. You don't have to do everything, but the house looks good.
There's some things I would do to really look at, you know, trying to pull the utility bill down, because you're really just affecting their monthly payment a little bit. But other than that, this is a classic notar deal.
Okay, I was going to say, Eddie, too, sorry to interrupt you there, but if we've got an owner, somebody, they may be a little more savvy with the utilities. I mean, with the tenants, and they just don't understand how to lower their electric bill.
Yeah. I've run across people in a 4,000 square foot house putting it on, not auto, and 85 degrees with the windows open, and I can't figure out why they have a big utility bill.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Do you know what Dwayne says about that? Y'all know Dwayne, right? You know Big Dwayne? You know what Dwayne says about that? Dwayne says the question's going to get a lot harder.
I love Dwayne.
Keith Bayock has a lot of experience. He suggested a high efficiency furnace. I don't know. He lives up there where it gets really cold. He lives up there north of Canada, I think, called Detroit.
I think the units are right. I That's fairly.
Well, it's an older unit. It's not a fit, it's not as near as energy as it is today. But.
Okay. But you think seller finance, huh?
I think that's the way to go.
Okay.
As far as
and it's interesting because a couple of people have commented. I got one thing about it, I got all these smart people on the call with us, and they're they're coming up with different numbers based on rental, like Rent-A-Meter showing 780. Anyway, listen, if you guys know what the rent is, have you? I ordered a rent fax.
Okay.
No, excuse me. Order a Rent-A-Meter. No, rent fax. I said it wrong. I get all these companies mixed up sometimes.
Rent fax.
And just confirm their numbers. And also, it'll give you a sense about how they rate the neighborhood.
Okay. So maybe talk to NAA about doing a seller finance for us, because I really feel like we need to not. Not manage it, or I mean, not that you'd be managing on a seller finance, but we need to step away from.
If you decide to rent it, we're going to make you a guinea pig for a company that Charles and I deal with.
Great.
And they manage 17,000 rentals for Fannie Mae. Ralph, I see what you're saying. This house has incredible rent value, doesn't it, Charles?
It really does. I mean, it's a nice house. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of big families that you could owner finance that real quick.
Okay.
And the other good thing about owner financing is, it's not like a renter. These people will take pride in ownership. If they know they're going to own something,
Here's my thing with NAA. They just need to market it, seller financing for deserving buyer with large down payment. Those are Eddie's words.
Right.
Okay. So if it doesn't draw a large down payment, there's no deal.
Right.
3,000 down, stick a fork in this deal, you're done. You know.
Well, we need to do that. We need to do that now while people are getting their tax return, and I guess I just need to call. I feel like NAA is real busy, so I don't want to hound them and bug them, but I need to just follow up and see if we can.
I'll tell you, we were on the phone with the executive team and the owner this morning, and I still assure you that's not an acceptable answer to them.
That's right.
Okay.
I'll bet you the daggum ranch on that one.
Okay.
That's kind of like saying me and Eddie are busy. We're not going to be on the call.
we ain't going to do no more. We don't want to do any business today.
Exactly.
We're too busy to do any more business.
All right. Well, I will.
Anybody that gets that flavor, send me an email.
Okay.
Eddie@noteschool.com. I had a couple people comment. I'm not trying to invoke anybody that's not got a factual statement, but that's not. We have weekly meetings with these guys working through mechanics. So we're, the management team and stuff is good. Right now I mentioned it, and I get all people lighting it up going, they're great, they're wonderful. Somebody else is seller financing for deserving buyers with large down payment.
Right.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
I will feel very good because you guys were so – frustrated with this deal, and you were willing to go lose money on it. And this is a classic example of how selling traditional real estate versus the methods that we use is a game changer.
Right.
All right. Beautiful.
All right. Can I ask you one more quick question?
Yes,
We have a land contract that can we look at that maybe on Monday, that Watauga property? I know you guys were really late last night.
Yeah, we were, weren't we? My God. Okay, so ask me the question again about money now. What are you trying to?
That's okay. We'd send in one other case study where we've got tenants in there. We want to convert it to a land contract. It's just a deal that we've had for a while. We need to get it straightened out, and we just wanted your advice on it. I'd send it in Friday.
All right. Well, my deepest apologies. We didn't get to it.
It's okay.
I'm going to ask you one. I'm going to ask you a filtering question, though.
Sure. Okay.
You're wanting to owner finance your current tenants.
Land contract. We want to convert it. They've been in there since 2012. We've tried to get them to get their credit where it needs to be to just buy it, and it's just not going to happen.
All right, why in the world would you sell it to them?
Because we don't want it back, and it's a perfect fit for them, and they've been paying us $1,000 rent for 47 months.
Then sell it as a turnkey property.
But they want to own it.
Of course they do, but they haven't done what they need to do. What, did you adopt them?
Well.
I'm having fun with you guys, okay, right? Just know I'm not really.
Honestly, with all the detail that we don't need to get into, because I'm sure there's plenty of other things on this call tonight.
But let me tell you something. I've spent my life, 35 years of buying seller finance notes, okay? I'm going to tell you from experience, I've seen it over and over and over and over where people sell their house to their tenant and they don't get any gain from it. They get no money down. They get no different payment. And at the end of the day, it's like that doesn't make any sense. There is a fever for people to buy rent properties. Okay? So there's people that will pay you very, very good money because it's a rent house. Okay? That's what the market tells you to do. And the fact that you say, well, I want to sell it to my tenant, well, don't matter. Well, they bring the table. If they don't bring the highest and best use to the table to you, then the market says you got to go do something different.
Well, I think this is highest and best use, Eddie, and that's why that email, maybe you guys just didn't get it. I can resend it again, but I mean it's a 4,000 square foot, it's, well, not 3,800 square foot house. It's huge. It's a 6-bedroom, 4-bath. It was a triplex. It's just, you got to get all the details, I think. I understand where you're coming from, but I don't know. Like I say, if you can maybe just rip
through. I'll tell you what. Charles, let's pile off into that next week.
Yeah.
Sounds like we'll have a good conversation on that.
Okay, very good.
Oh, I'm sure.
It may be 2 hours next week on that call.
Rest of the notes. Don't do what they do.
No, we're learning better ways from you guys now.
That's the mission. I've practiced all the bad ones, trust me.
Yeah.
All right,
thank you guys.
Thanks, guys.
Yep,
thanks.
Appreciate it.
Hey, Karen.
Thank you.
Karen. Hey, guys. If you don't mind, resend that email into content so that I can make sure that I have it and it's fresh.
I sure will. Thanks, Matthew.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Matt.
You're welcome. Thanks.
All right, Matt. I'm gonna let Charles run with it for a second. I'll be right. I got to do something for 2 seconds.
All right, sounds good. So, Charles.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let me see if I believe I talked to Sandy, and I believe. Well, no, maybe it wasn't Sandy I talked to. Sandy, if you are under a different name, it may be. Is it under Gary? I'll go ahead and unmute Gary. So. Gary?
That's right. It's under Gary.
Hey, Sandy.
Guys, you there?
I am.
How are you, Sandy?
I'm good. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Okay. Good. loud and clear. So what you got, Sandy?
Okay, so as we all know, taxes are coming up soon. Yeah. And I've never done any taxes since we've been involved with Notes. I have an accountant that's been doing taxes for several years for me. Uh-huh. But I don't know if this person's going to be qualified to do taxes regarding Notes. And I was wondering if there's some specific questions I could ask him.
Well, I mean, you're just going to...
might give me an idea.
Well, you probably just need to sit down with him, Sandy, and talk to him at first. Just, you know, tell him what you're doing, what your business is. You know, that you're buying NPL notes. I mean, a perfect example is I use an accountant, and when I create schedules for him, you know, as far as my expenses on the notes, if there's any income, you know, what my expenses are. But basically, when I sit down and talk to him, I pretty much explain to him what I did. You know, we buy non-performing notes. You know, we have companies that sell these distressed notes. We buy them at a discount, and pretty much he can tell you if he acts clueless, he's not going to get it.
Okay. And part of my problem, too, is the fact that I personally don't really know how notes should be handled versus real estate.
Well, I mean, if they're non-performing notes, basically you're going to have – you're going to have a lot of write-offs on the expenses.
Sure.
And, I mean, there's depreciation, and I'm not an accountant, so I really can't go into all the details. But, yeah, there's depreciation. And so you just talking to an accountant, you should get a pretty good feel. You're right, every accountant's not going to be familiar with notes. And, I think just talking to him and just asking him questions as far as, you know, what is a process? You know, what are my write-offs? How do we calculate depreciation? Do you calculate depreciation on this? I mean, just going into the details, just kind of trying to get a feel if he really knows anything about notes.
Okay.
And I mean, we here at Colonial, we have had a couple of different accountants And we deal with a lot of notes, as you well know. So, but I mean, even the Colonial's personal portfolios. I've got a great company out of, Hattiesburg that does one of our businesses, you know, accounting, and they've been doing it for years, and they're very familiar with it. But it's not for every accountant. And Basically, the interviewing process, you just need to see if you think they're knowledgeable. You know,
okay.
I mean, I wish there was some type of questionnaire we had. There's not. We don't. You know, there's not really a questionnaire. How many notes do you have currently?
We just have one, and somewhat recently purchased a non-performing.
Okay, so you have one performing and one non-performing?
No, only one non-performing.
Oh, okay. So yeah, so that's not. It's not like you have a big portfolio yet, but you know he needs to understand that that's your business, and that's what you want to do is grow the business and buy more notes. And I guess just by talking to him, starting out with one note, I would think it'd be relatively simple if he understands the note business.
Okay.
But like I say, not everybody understands the note business.
Yeah, we'll see what he has to say.
And and just ask him some questions, and then I'd like to hear what he says when you talk to him.
We're having meetings right now with a group about the accounting piece, and in fact they were in our office a couple of weeks ago specifically about the uniqueness of accounting for notes and how some of these things are treated. So if you don't feel comfortable with your accountant, I feel like fairly quickly, and I'm going to say within the next 30 days, that we're going to have hopefully a workable resolution for folks.
Any chance you could have an accountant come on and just maybe do a little discussion about how they're handled?
Yeah, Let me. I don't. You know, I have to be careful when I do that. Like, all of a sudden, they get barraged with stuff. The uniqueness of non-performing notes is really the issue in the business, and it only really gets into play when you're qualified as a dealer, meaning you do north of 5 transactions a year. In your case, a non-performing note is going to be on the. My thought is, if you're all correct me if I'm wrong, it's going to be on the books just like buying a REO property. You got a cost basis in the note, you have a cost in the foreclosure, and you know, you resell it, you can resell it and under finance it on installment loan basis.
Okay.
I mean, that is pretty generic accounting right there.
Yeah, that's I just didn't know if they should be handled in a different way, being that the note itself is personal property.
No, it's just a back doorway to get to the property.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right, Mr. Matt, what's next?
All right, so next up we have a question from Al. So let me get muted. There we go. Al, you're muted. Go ahead. Al? Carolyn?
Hello, we're here.
Is it not working? Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, okay, good.
You're looking good today, Eddie, except I can't see you.
How are you, Al?
Doing good.
I think
Eddie, yes, sir. Actually, to tell you all the truth, I am. I've got to go to a meeting, and I have transitioned from the computer to my cell phone. And my mission is you guys don't know the difference.
No.
And so I'm trying to do that as an encouragement, to everybody, with all this audio stuff. So, because I love the fact that one of the things that we did really cool when we had all these calls for years that weren't really webinars, is you know, students would get on there and ask questions all the time. We'd talk through stuff, and it made good case study and whatever. So, anyway, Mr. Al, what you got?
Carolyn wants to talk about it right now, Eddie.
Okay, we have a house in Brazil, Indiana, that we are doing the due diligence on the property. And we have several questions that are regarding the deed. And so what we've done is we went on and typed up what we had, everything that I could find in this chain for the title. And I was going to kind of go through it with you. You want me to read it out?
Charles, yeah. Should
you look at it? Okay. Main question comes down at the bottom. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. So I'm just looking through your chain of title here. It looks like there was a foreclosure. And then it looks like that Fannie Mae sold it to Harbor, and Harbor sold it to a new purchaser on a land contract. And now your question, I think, goes in January of 2015, Harbor assigned it to Rocktop. The contract between Harbor and Shelbyland had $10, correct?
That's correct. So what we don't understand is who actually holds the deed. It was... I mean, it went through so many different things, and we don't know whether Sheba Hutchison would still be, even though it was a land contract, would she be the one that would still have the deed?
Well, she didn't have a deed because it's a land contract.
Okay.
Let's go. This is a very good question. Okay. So let's go through the basics. Okay. And we're going to use Charles and Eddie as the example. Okay.
Okay.
Charles owned an REO property, okay? Charles sells it to Eddie under a land contract. How does a land contract work?
Well, the Charles would be still holding the deed for it.
That's right. And when does he give Eddie the deed?
When Eddie finishes paying everything.
Right. It's a lease option on steroids, right?
Uh-huh.
All right. So who holds the deed?
Well,
Charles does.
Charles has the deed.
Yeah, Charles has the deed, yes.
All right. So hold on. Charles decides to sell his land contract to Al. Right?
Uh-huh.
How does he pay for it?
Well, I assume it's still in a land contract, but...
So what he does is he deeds the property to Al.
Okay.
And he does an assignment of the land contract. Now what does Al have? The identical position Charles had.
Okay. So then Al would have the deed, but it would still be a land contract, is that correct?
That's right.
So the lady that they was working with them would then be still holding the deed since she's not listed. But the way it's written up, it looks like both Rocktop and she sold the property.
No, Harbor.
Harbor.
She.
No. Harbor sold it to her.
Uh huh.
And then Harbor sold their land contract to Rocktop.
Okay.
Right? Rocktop has the deed. Rocktop took an assignment of the land contract. Now Rocktop jumped in Harbor's lap, and they're sitting in the exact same position.
Okay, so then Rocktop has the deed then.
You got it.
Well, we thought that, but then we didn't know if... Okay, so then how would you get the deed from a person, a company? We understand.
Well, because they're offering this asset for sale. We're trying to help Rocktop sell his asset. Uh-huh. Aren't we, Charles, or we buy it from them?
We bought it from Rocktop.
Sometimes we. All right. So now who's got the deed?
Well, Charles has the deed.
You got it.
Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. Now, if this is let me ask you again, Carolyn. Was this a third party offering? This is actually one of the ones that we own that we put out on the table, correct?
From the January. List.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's our asset. So Colonial will be entitled now. Your report doesn't show this yet because the title was just recently recorded.
Yeah, we swap assets amongst each other. I mean, sometimes, we buy directly from Harbor, but understand, we're trading a lot of loans, and sometimes but the bottom line is, Harbor sells it to Rocktop, and they deed it to them, assign the land contract. Rocktop sells it to Colonial, they deed it to them and assign the land contract. The delinquent borrower is the delinquent borrower.
Okay. So right now it's Colonial owns the deed, and when we buy it from Colonial, we have the deed.
That is correct.
Okay. Is that correct? Great.
Sounds like a good idea.
Sounds good. Well, this has been an interesting experience.
You,
I have poured.
Come on,
all
you play. Before. You play. What? Who's on first before, haven't you?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
You know what? Let me just tell you this. The reason I like covering this on this call is because when you get this in your head, you got it. And when you don't, it becomes a barrier to people. So I like anytime somebody has a confusion about it to go over it. So, once again,
this is a defaulted land contract, right?
Yes.
Yes.
That is correct.
All right. Well, is it recorded or not recorded?
It was not recorded.
All right.
The land contract was not recorded.
And Mr. Manga's going to give you some good news.
All right.
Okay.
That unrecorded land contract's a lot easier to foreclose on than a recorded land contract.
Oh, okay, good.
In most states, when a land contract is unrecorded, you can terminate. Not every state, but now this is in Indiana.
Yeah, it's a judicial state, though.
Yeah,
don't worry about that.
Because okay. the land contract is actually not recorded in the buyer's name. And okay. So when you talk to an attorney about foreclosing or a servicer, they're going to terminate that contract. Or basically it's just almost like an eviction process. They have to send out a notice of termination on the land contract. And it works more like an eviction process than it does a foreclosure process.
Okay.
Okay, well, there's no one in the house. The house is empty, so.
All right, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
What if you had a lease on a house and your tenant moved out?
I'd own the house still.
And do you have to go evict them?
Not if they moved out.
No, not if they moved out.
You got it. You got it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Megan, you better change the price on the asset. Let me go up a little bit.
Wait a minute. Now, Eddie, before I go, I do have to ask you a question.
All right, is this a Sunday school joke coming?
You don't have to assume that one. What do you call a laptop that sings?
A laptop that sings, no clue.
Charles, you know what you call a laptop that sings?
Al, I don't.
Adele. Thank you, guys. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good one.
Bye.
When Al comes to an event, he will have at least three of those type of jokes for me available at any given time.
Well, that's always good to have. We always need
that. Well,
we always need that humor.
It makes me laugh. All right. Very good. Matt, what else we got?
Well, I was just – hey, Charles, and just to highlight this, I just went into Orion and pulled up the assignment of the land contract as well as the special warranty deed that we have that directly ties or goes from Rock Top to us. So that's kind of been showing here. So
we need to get Al and Carolyn a copy of that so they'll have that for the record showing it was where Colonial Impact purchased that.
Perfect. So, Alan, if y'all send that me an email, I'll get that over to you as soon as you get that. So, all right, Charles, let me unmute Lisa. She has a question for you. Okay.
No, not Lisa. Not today.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Oh, hello, Lisa.
He has no microphone, so I'll ask the question. How does a money judgment fit into land contract notice of termination scenario?
First of all, Lisa was supposed to get a microphone for Christmas, okay? We can't wait till next Christmas for Lisa to get a microphone.
Do we need to pass the collection plate around, or, I mean...
Do what?
Do we need to pass the collection plate around? Maybe.
I think we're going to have to. So what's her question? I'm sorry again, Matt. What's her question again?
I says, how does a money judgment fit into the land contract notice of termination scenario?
A judgment. Okay, so now what type of, when you say a money judgment, are you talking about a judgment through a city lien? Or are you talking about a judgment that may have been obtained through a credit card company? And that's...
Oops. She's saying a debt judgment.
A what?
A debt judgment.
All right. Well, let's go back to our riddle again. Okay. Charles. you own an REO property and you sold it to Eddie. Okay?
Okay.
And you have title to it because you sold it to me via what? A land contract.
Correct.
Eddie goes out and buys a new Dell laptop on credit and doesn't pay for it. And the creditor decides to go seek a judgment against me, and they file that of record in the courthouse, so it would attach to any real property I own in that county, right?
Right.
What's the catch?
You don't own that property.
You got it.
Now, but my question to Lisa is the land contract recorded? Did she respond, Matt?
Not recorded.
Not recorded. So, yeah, it's not attaching to the property because Lisa, or they don't own the property.
Yeah, and I don't believe Charles is going to attach even on a recorded land contract. I mean, they don't have fee simple title of the property.
No, and it would not. You're right. They don't have fee simple title, but, you know, just going to verify with attorney. Some states they may require you. And here we go back to the attorney's opinion. Okay, you got to make sure you got an attorney you trust, because some attorneys may tell you, yeah, it's going to attach. You got to foreclose it out just to go through a foreclosure. But it may not attach in most cases, but you know. A lot of times, attorneys just are going to try to be better safe than sorry, and give me $500, and I'll take care of it.
This is why we're so particular on land contracts of what servicing arm that you use to do these foreclosures on land contracts. Because if you don't have a specialist attorney that understands land contracts, it's like me going to a divorce attorney about an oil and gas deal. Just not doesn't mean they're incompetent, doesn't mean they have specialized knowledge about our product and business.
So, Mr. Speed?
Yes.
Does this make a difference? So she's clarifying the debt judgment is for unpaid payments on the land contract, which is in the language of the land contract.
The judgment is unpaid payments? So this is the judgment filed by the note or the note holder.
So that means only thing it sounds like to me, Charles, that's the foreclosure action.
They've already.
Without data or something here, I don't want to. We're kind of guessing around too much, but
That's what it sounds like to me, though.
It sounds like they're foreclosed.
Yeah.
If they've sought a judgment, which is a judicial order that says it's now foreclosed on.
Right.
All right. Lisa's like one of our very best at coming up with good stuff, so... just the only thing here, Lisa, I'm a little bit nervous because we don't really have the paperwork to kind of get a sense of what you're talking about. It's not what you're asking is, I'm sure you're reading it correctly, but it's not common enough that it like jumps off the page and, oh, yeah, well, this is what you mean.
She's going to get with Charles, and then she'll come back and report back on that on the call. So
yeah, Lisa, just call me, and we'll talk through it.
By the way, Lisa's a technology person, and I'm not. So, but any of you guys that are trying to, like, get in on the call and talk to us, you don't have to use the webinar thing. You can just use a regular phone and just, you know, click the audio thing that's it's to your phone, so that's what I'm on right now, is telephone. So anyway, I'm sure that I don't need to tell most of you technology folks how to use a webinar, but
this aid. And some, I'm not saying Lisa in particular, but some of you that are like struggling with audio stuff, that's another alternative you could do.
Like I have.
All right.
Yeah. All right. That's
what else, Mr. Matt?
Well, that was all of the content we had, and believe it or not, we are 4 minutes early. So.
All right. Well, let me make a couple of announcements. We have a titanium mastermind that's coming up in May. I know Susan is finalizing the agreement right now. It does not conflict with Walter Walters and Quest Love Boat thing that they do. I'm not being funny about that. I just don't remember what IRA fun crew. It does not conflict with that. So you can do both, but it is a titanium mastermind. It will be here in Dallas. We'll have the date out here in probably a week or so. And we have, that's in April, isn't it, Charles?
Yeah.
Okay, and then in May, we have the Summer Summit. And then we're going to come out with the information on that. So I know Susan is working very hard to finalize the contract. We just don't want to make an official announcement, and all of a sudden everybody's like, she made their airplane tickets and whatever. So we're still in that January. We're not like we're being tardy or anything, but we're going to come out with those dates here probably by next week. I know that those of you that are interested, we're going to have a little webinar for only those that are interested about the hog hunt or the fundraiser. And then I know Martha's going to do some kind of a webinar. She's got a pretty long list of people that are interested. She's going to do some kind of a deal on her ladies' mastermind, which is not part. The hog hunt and the ladies' mastermind are not part of the mentoring. They're kind of add-ons. So because I've worked with both of those guys here in the last few days, I know that I don't know exactly when the webinar for those two separate events. And Matt, I'm guessing that a lot of ladies mastermind people that are interested in the ladies mastermind are not necessarily interested in the hog hunt.
That's probably a fair bet.
But you could do both, couldn't you?
Absolutely.
Now, there is a restriction in the ladies mastermind. And that is you and Mangan can't go.
I kind of figured that's what it was.
Yeah.
Isn't that just
yeah.
Hey,
what's the boy? You know, I want to get off in that Bruce Jenner thing again, but I'm not going to do it.
So, two things real quick. Russ was asking when the hog hunt date is, and then we have Bob Essler who has his hand raised.
All right, Russ, we have a date, and I know that you have been working with Paul on that, and we will get back with you shortly. And actually, I'm going to be with Paul here in a little bit. Bob Essler.
How are you doing, Eddie?
What's up?
Oh, it's good seeing you this weekend.
Yes, sir. Good seeing you.
Hey, I got a quick question. We have a land contract that it looks like is probably going to come back to us. It's in Michigan, which isn't all bad. You know, I think we're into it for low 20s, and the property's worth, you know, mid-50s to 60. And it's got a good rent market, too. My question is, if the borrower wants to short sale that, can they even do that?
The borrower wants to what?
Do a short sale. Can they sell their interest out? Because there's a lot of margin in that in me for a foreclosure.
Nope. Who has to agree to a short sale?
Pardon me?
Who has to agree to a short sale?
Well, the bank.
Do you agree to it?
No.
All right, well, there's your answer.
You're one of them inflexible you're one of them inflexible bankers, aren't you?
I can be.
No, you don't have to agree to it, and there's no pressure you should feel like you should.
Yeah, I don't think they're savvy enough to consider that, or probably even if they were, I doubt they have their act together enough to pull it off. But
yeah. No, that doesn't fit your scenario, I don't think.
Thank you.
All right, great. All right, so I mentioned several dates and possibilities. I'm just kind of announcing to you guys we're going to be pushing it out here over the next sure as I say this, I'll say it wrong, but I do think I'm right about the hog hunt. It's the first weekend in April, Matt. Isn't that correct? Sound right?
That sounds right.
And Martha's thing is, I think, the last weekend in April, her ladies mastermind. So we'll come out with official dates, but actually I think I'm right about it.
Let's see here. What do I have here?
Don't worry about it. They may have changed it. I think I'm right, but we're going to come out with we're going to come out with information and have a webinar where people that are interested in those things can listen here pretty quickly. So I did work do some possibilities with Martha this morning. I don't really have anything to do with running the ladies' mastermind at all, but I did work through some things there that I know Martha was wanting to offer to some of the ladies, and we just kind of talked through it to make sure it all sounded good. So I know she's working out something pretty quickly.
Yeah. Mr. Speed?
All right. Yes.
So I was just looking at my last email just for a tentative, but the date was put on from March 31st to April 3rd.
Yeah. On the hog hunt. Yeah, I think that's right. Okay. Well, you guys have a great day. Mr. Manga, I'm glad you got us out of this call quicker than an hour and 45 minutes that you did last night.
That's right. I get home a little earlier tonight, Eddie.
Oh, all right. You guys have a good day. Good call. Great content. Thanks.
Good night, everybody.